Welcome to the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with Gary Spike O'Sullivan, a professional middleweight boxer from Cork. Today, Spike is going to talk about how he got into boxing and how he deals with the highs and lows of being an elite athlete. But before we get into all that, Spike, I was tempted to introduce you something like, "And today, talking from the green corner in Cork, Ireland, we have Gary Spike O'Sullivan." But I thought, you know, I'll not go down that road. And I knew I was going to get it in. I'm sorry, Spike. I had to get that in. Sorry. Tell us a wee bit about yourself, or your background, your influences. There's three questions in one, and how you get into boxing. And thanks very much for agreeing to do our podcast, Spike.
Jeez, my pleasure, Paul. Great speech, ye. how I got into boxing. I was only 5 years of age. My father was he bought a box himself, and my brother's early hours of the morning, we used to watch all the fights. Okay, we used to go to bed and he'd set the alarm to wake us up, and we get up and watch all those fights. And we used to watch all the big fights in the UK as well. Obviously, all the big fights, just watch all of them. And you know, that's pretty much how much I got into boxing.
And any sort of, where are you from? Now, I've just said Cork. Are you from Cork?
I'm from Cork, yeah, and still live in Cork. I've been here my entire life. I've been back and forth from America boxing, but I never lived there. I just went over, had my fights, and came back, basically, you know. I fought kind of all over the world, really. I've had fights in a couple in the UK, and geez, I'm trying to remember now, Belgium. I think I had about 17 in America, as far as I remember. But I'm from Cork, based in Cork, and hope to live here forever.
Good man. And when did you turn professional?
I turned professional in January 26th, 2008.
And what age were you then?
I was 23 then. Old enough to turn professional, I think. A lot of lads kind of turn a little bit earlier, but I'd done an apprenticeship as a sheet metal worker before that, and I was working doing that for about 8.5 years. So before I was actually working as well in the beginning as a pro fighter for a couple of years. It was very, very hard, very tiring, extremely tiring. Actually, one time I was that tired, I got blisters on the night. I found these when I went to the hospital later on after I had a crash. But I got kind of like water blisters underneath my both of my armpits. I was completely run down. I was driving on a motorbike. I fell asleep on the motorbike and crashed into the back of the car. I'm wrecked.
I've heard of people, falling asleep behind the wheel of a car, including myself in that one. But, and I did have a motorbike, but flip, never fell asleep. You must have been really done in.
Really done in, like running on fumes, you know. And I fell asleep the day before as well, actually, in hindsight. You know, I was just driving through a roundabout, fell asleep, and I heard someone beeping, and I was like, oh, what had just happened there? And I must have woke up, but I thought to myself, surely that couldn't have happened. And I just proceeded on, done the day's work. And anyway, the next day happened again, but I crashed that time into the back of a car. I was absolutely wrecked.
It's professional boxing. You've just said you turned professional at 23. You've boxed all over the world. What's your sort of greatest achievement in sport now, not in life, but your greatest achievement in sport?
Jeez, it's funny, you know. I've had a good sporting career. I was very fond many years ago. Jeez, going back, that was 23 years ago. I scored a goal in the cup final. We won 1-0 in Cork City's ground. Ground I would have went to as a teenager. I was only there last week with my son watching a game, and I still go there. It's the biggest soccer pitch in Cork, like the most well known is where our home team play, Cork City. So I scored a goal there and I'm winning in a cup final, which I liked that. It was a great achievement, I thought. And I was a big snooker fan as well, still am. Yeah. I really enjoy snooker. And I played Steve Davis one time in front of an audience, which was fantastic because it's the only time I ever done that. And I grew up watching snooker on the TV and I had a real love for it. And then, anyway, I beat Steve Davis, which was absolutely
brilliant.
brilliant. It was brilliant. Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I seen in the news, you know, when I seen in the newspapers the next day and stuff, it was fantastic. Really, you know, that was a great sporting achievement. I thought I really enjoyed. That might have been my favorite night. But I suppose I am a boxer, and I think my best night was in Quebec in 2017, December. It was minus 30 out in Quebec, Canada. Wow. I was brought in to get beaten. I was fighting an American. I had no right to beat him, I guess. He was bigger than me, stronger, like much bigger. I remember my partner going, geez, he's got an 8-pack, you know, you're in trouble here. And he was a specimen, you know. Uh-huh. And He was a better boxer than me, you know. He was just better. He was bigger. He was better looking. He was all that. But I had the hunger, you know. I was living with my mother-in-law at the time, and I had two kids, and they were living with us, and I built a bunk bed to fit it into the corner. We were sleeping in the box room in my mother-in-law's, and I built a bunk bed to fit it in there for the two kids, and myself and my partner were sleeping in another bed. And I was just very hungry to provide and try and get money to. I knew if I was with Golden Boy Promotions, and I was brought into, you know, I was the B-side fighter. They were expected the other guy to beat me, and but I knew if I'd beat him, I could have the opportunity to sign with Golden Boy, you know, Oscar De La Hoya and mm-hmm. America, and get the bigger fights and potentially get the money to buy a house for my family. So, you know, one of my favorite sayings is "Hunger is a great sauce," you know, and then. Good. I trained extremely hard for that fight, and I remember looking across the ring at him and on the night in Quebec, and I thought, you know, you were running up this particular hill. I live close by to know, actually. And I remember I used to sprint up that hill, and I really didn't want to do it because Cork is cold and damp, and especially in the winter and coming up to December, and many nights be getting a bit dark and wouldn't entice you to go for a run, you know. But I never missed it. I always went out and done it, even though I didn't enjoy it. But I was working my ass off, and I remember standing across the ring from that night thinking, you weren't running up that hill. You know, he was probably in America in some lovely warm resort training for the fight. So I don't think he was ever going to win that night, and I beat him. I beat him badly. I knocked him out, and I wore him down. He was, as I say, he was better than me. Yeah. You know, he had all the attributes. He was, you know, he was that bit better than me in every department, I think. But just, it was just the mindset and the hunger, and I battered him.
You know. Fair play to you. And I suppose, you know, I love boxing. I'm going to put it out there. I love it, but it is tough. It must be really, really, I mean, I'm going to, this is really self-explanatory, but it must be really sore to take a dig.
You become conditioned to it, you know. I've taken thousands upon thousands and thousands and thousands of punches over the years, and you kind of become conditioned to it. I think there was a big fight on Saturday night, and Gervonta Davis against Ryan Garcia. I don't know if you watched it, but I've seen a lot of fans, you know, they were criticizing Garcia for going down with a body punch. You know, it looked like it was nothing to them. Uh-huh. You know, but being a fighter myself, I know very well the body shots are the ones that hurt the most. And you know, I'm losing train of thought, but as regards taking punches being sore, yeah, they are sore, but you become conditioned to them, and it's the body punches that generally the good body punches, the bad ones, the ones that get you good, they're the ones that get you bad, you know.
I saw that fight, it was on the early hours, but as you say, the body punch, it hit him and it didn't affect him. Like, if you get a dig to the head, and you go down and you get knocked out. But when you get a body punch on Saturday night, sir, it took about 10 seconds or something, because he stepped back and then he was went down.
Yeah.
So it sort of is like nearly a delayed
reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so painful. It's like really, really painful.
Mm-hmm. And then we were speaking briefly last week, and then the other punch which hurts is the one you don't see.
Absolutely, yeah. Anyway. I felt as though, I always felt as though I had an invincible chin. I thought it was my, possibly my main attribute at the time, that I couldn't be knocked out. I just felt invincible because I sparred many lads in the gym, heavyweights and all that through the years, and got caught with very thunderous punches and never been knocked down. You know, I felt like I could just withstand anything. But anyway, when I was fighting in Las Vegas, not for very long, but anyway, about 2.5 minutes, I got caught with a punch I didn't see coming.
Oh.
And ended up on the deck, and yeah. that was it for me.
Yeah,
that night.
So it's very unforgiving. So how do you look after yourself? How does Spike O'Sullivan look after his well-being as an elite athlete? How do you, because you're still boxing, Spike, so
I'm still boxing.
Yeah, how do you look after yourself?
Well, I get to the gym several times a week, probably on average I would say 6 times a week, even though I don't have a fight coming up, and I'm recovering from an injury. I broke my ankle there just before Christmas, and so I'm getting back, but I'm training away. But for the most part, I have a good diet as well. Pretty good diet majority of the time, even though I enjoy all the bad foods too. Mm-hmm. Pizzas, burgers, chips, mm-hmm. everything, crisps, you name it, anything you can put in your mouth. I love eating it, but you got to have a bit of discipline, and especially when you want to lose weight. So yeah. That's how I look after myself. And actually, two of my friends are doctors there as well. They were telling me about UCC, Cork University College Cork, on the verge of this massive discovery about the connection directly between the gut and the brain, the link there, and it makes a lot of sense to me, because mm-hmm. what I think about is if you go out, you go on the drink, we'll say a heavy session, and you're not feeling well after it, really, mentally, and it's the opposite to having like good bacteria in your stomach. You're just ruining yourself having too much drink. You'll feel desperate, so so they recommend a thing called kefir or kefir, whatever, there's different pronunciations of it, but I have that a couple of times a week to have good bacteria in my gut, try to maintain good mental health,
what do you call that again, Spike?
I think it's called kefir. Yeah, you can get it in the shops. It's kind of sweet, and though it has some people pronounce it kefir. I think it's spelled kefir.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there's one E in it anyway. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I think it's like kefir.
Right, and that's for your gut. And how do you take? Is it? I have no idea. Is it a plant?
It's a drink.
It's a drink. Okay.
It's a drink. No, I make my own when I'm home. It's just like I have the kefir kind of, I don't know what they're called. Like they look like small miniature heads of cauliflower, and I have them in milk, and I pour the milk in, and it just kind of curdles the milk after about 2 or 3 days.
Right.
And it's a bit bitter, but I don't care. If it's good for your health, if you told me a rock down the beach or the sand down the beach was a good for your health, if you had it, I'd probably eat it,
You don't do the rocky one, the raw eggs.
I used to growing up, and actually my father used to give them to myself and my brothers before school, and actually came to the point where we used to really love them, I done it. There was like a raw egg challenge or something lately there. I think it was during lockdown or something like that. And I tried one and I nearly got sick. Rotten.
No, I was thinking that's cotton. No, I don't know, no.
But no, honestly, I actually believe that you can acquire the taste from pretty much anything, because the kefir, whatever, kefir, whatever the stuff I have there, I must admit, in the beginning it was pretty, wasn't the best.
Yeah.
But I actually love it. I love it now. And I think if you had an egg every single day, I swear to God, I used to love it.
Yeah.
I really used to love it when I was a kid. Primary school, my dad would give myself, the brothers, a raw egg every morning with a bit of porridge or whatever. And so love them, absolutely love them.
I suppose I take beetroot juice every morning.
Oh, yeah, very good. Very good for health, yeah.
But it's expensive now with the cost of living. Flip me, it's nearly £4 for a container. Absolutely. Very dear. But in the beginning, because I do a wee bit of running, the boys were going to get it, Indian tar, it was stinking. But see, after a while, I love it. Absolutely love it. But
there you go. There's your example for you. But,
yeah,
but, but, for, For a man with York type of money, like, I'm surprised you're complaining about the price.
you have to meet me in person. You have to, I will see what it's like. I'm telling you. Well, right, we're getting on to the next question then, Brian, because this is.
But you know what? Going back, can I just before we go on, going back to the beetroot juice, I remember one time I always remember the date, it was July 14th, 2012, because that happened to be my birthday, but I was boxing in Upton Park, the old West Ham United's football pitch. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring it up, and the beetroot, was when we took the drug test afterwards, myself and my opponent, when he done his urine test, his urine looked like beetroot juice, you know?
And what was that? Was that dehydration or?
He was on the beetroot, you know. I thought, like, it's good for your oxygen levels and stuff, you know. And
that's what
actually,
they say.
I remember, actually, I recall I met a taxi driver one time. I always remember his name was Git Slater. I always remember his name because he was a neighbour of my trainer growing up. And he told me he was nearly put on medication by the doctor. I think it was for high blood pressure or something. Mm-hmm. And he researched it and he checked out that beetroot juice reverses that.
Wow.
And he started on the beetroot juice.
Right.
And so he went back to his doctor and he got a test done, and his doctor said, how the hell did you get it back down to normal? And he said he started taking the beetroot juice. So,
There you go. Beetroot juice. And that kaffir thing and the beetroot juice, Brian, the tech guy, now he's got his wee book out, his wee black book, and he's writing it all down.
straight off shop
later. He'll be away down the shops getting all that. So right, now let's see where we're at. Right, yes. So you're Spike, how many years are you boxing? You did tell me there. You started at 23. So
yeah, but I started boxing as a 5-year-old.
Boxing.
Professional boxing, I think I'm in my 16th year, yeah.
And then how many years? Who's the longest, or who's the longest serving, or longest, or the longest professional Irish boxer? How far away are you from that?
Not too far, actually. I started doing a bit of writing there for the Examiner, the newspaper, and doing a little bit of research. And so far as I can establish, so far, by the box, the longest. Professionally in history of Ireland, I'm 17 years, so I'm in my 16th now.
All right.
So, but I knew that I always kind of had just something in my mind, I would like to box for 20 years professionally. I feel as though I can. I feel very, very good physically and I keep myself well, and I feel good and I feel as though I can do that. But I researched about 90% of the fighters, so I'm going to have to look into the last 10%. I must do that and establish how long they... Who is the very longest fighter of all time from Ireland? And
well, hopefully it'll be you soon.
Hopefully there's not some guy that I've missed, and he boxed for 30 years. You'll see me with the Zimmer frame. I get there.
Very good. Very good. So now, okay, so hopefully, fingers crossed, you can get to that threshold and hopefully be the longest professional boxer in Irish history. But at some point, you will have to stop. And have you any thoughts on what you're going to do, or what would you like to do?
I'm not after exactly boxing. Sure, but you know, I just accidentally fell into the journalism writing for the paper, you know, and I quite enjoy that. Do you ever hear that the sunscreen song?
I have. Yep.
He's talking about sunscreen. He says, I think part of the song, he says, look, some of the most interesting people I know are 30 years old, they don't know what they want to do. He said, but the most interesting people I know are 40 and they don't know what they want to do. Well, I'm nearly 39, I'm 39 in July, and I still don't know what I want to do, you know.
So, okay. Right, but you like your journalism?
Well, I like it. Like, it's funny. I'm interested in boxing, you know, I know a lot about it, and, you know, I'm still active and I know a lot of the fighters that I write about, so it's I do. I've really enjoyed it. I've wrote 11 pieces now for the Examiner, and I've enjoyed all of them.
Maybe there's a wee book in there, Irish Boxers, Carl Franklin, Barry McGuigan, Eamon O'Kane,
Yeah, the list goes on. All of them. I know all the lads. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a possibility. Or would you go into coaching?
I don't know. Coaching, like, I'm not sure.
You don't know.
I coached actually, and you know what? It was one of the most satisfactory feelings of my boxing career, and you know, was a coach and some lads, you know, from scratch. I ran an amateur boxing club with my brothers and my mother and my father many years ago in Mahon and Cork, and we had quite a successful club, and we produced 13 national champions, and every single fighter that came into that gym, we taught them from scratch. They never had boxed before, so we taught them how to box, you know, how to put on a pair of gloves, which their first time, and we produced 13 national champions.
Wow.
It was very, very satisfying feeling, you know, when when we were in Dublin and they became national champions in the national stadium. It was a great buzz.
Mm-hmm. Right, I think that's probably our questions nearly coming to an end. Here's one for you, Spike. What would be your dream job? There you go. What about that one? There's a wee spanner in the works for you. Or if at £1 million, what would you like to do?
£1 million.
It has to be that sort of worky type stuff, you know.
No, if I just buy a couple of hoses and just, just chill out.
You've got children.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, you've got kids and you've got a partner. What particularly your partner, what does your partner think about you still fighting?
Well, I think she'd be very, very nervous, you know. You know, she was good at my fights, but you know what? She reckons since she had kids that she's just more of a nervous person again, and she just is kind of rattled her just her system or whatever. I'm not sure, but exactly how to describe it. But she's more nervous these days than she was before she had kids. And my last fight, I fought Erez Landy Lara for the WBA middleweight world title in New York, and you know, I took quite a beating, I'll put it, I suppose. Like, it took a lot of punches, and was pretty marked up, and I got knocked down as well in that fight, which was unusual. Although I was more off balance, but it would appear to her that she wouldn't know, she couldn't tell, but she watched it with with her friend, and I remember video calling her afterwards. I was in a medical observation, and I rang her, and I just to tell her I was okay. I rang my parent, I rang my mother, video call both of them, just to tell them that I'm fine. I didn't look fine because both my ears were busted up, and my nose and my mouth and all that. But I felt fine, you know. I'm a tough man. I'm conditioned to be tough. I've got plenty of punches, as we discussed earlier, over the years, and I'm fine. I knew I was fine. But she was bawling, crying, you know, sitting on the couch with her friend. She was, early hours of the morning. I was in New York, and she was very, very.
It's tough, like, without a doubt. That's gotta be.
And I knew that fight. Actually, I got very kind of short notice. I just got less than 6 weeks notice for a fight of that magnitude. It was a big ask, and it would have been a big ask if I'd had 60 weeks. It didn't matter. I was fighting Erez Landy Lara, one of the best Cubans probably of all time, and Southpaw as well, which never suited me. And my daughter set her alarm. She's only 11 to get up and watch the fight, but I requested my missus to make sure to turn off her alarm and leave her sleep through it, because I didn't want my daughter watching the fight, because I had a good idea that it was going to be a brutal one, you know, tough, very tough.
Yeah.
So I didn't want my daughter watching that. But I think my daughter's very smart. She's 11. She'll be 12 in November. She's very in tune, and she's kind of a bit concerned about me boxing as well, a little bit, you know.
Right, okay. Right, well, the sooner you can get to that longest-serving boxer, and let's hope it is only another year to go.
Yeah, you know what? The thing is, I've always wanted to do 20 years, but really, I'm not going to try and fight all these. I fought, I think, 6 world champions in my career now, and I do one or two more of those, but
that's it.
That's it then. That's it. Yeah.
And just on that, Spike, who are you planning for? You know, you've got an ankle injury. What's your thoughts for your next fight? And where's it going to be?
My ankle is feeling really good now, and
good.
I'm back running, and so, which is the big major step for me. Well, I'm going to go to the Katie Taylor fight. I would have fought on that fight. Dennis Hogan is fighting JJ Metcalf on that for the IBO light middleweight world title. So I'd like to fight the winner of that. So I'm going to go to that fight and keep an eye on that. I'll try and get a fight in between myself, maybe hopefully July or August would be ideal. Maybe probably July. And then I think if Katie wins, and hopefully she does, obviously, she'll fight in Crow Parker here in September. So I'd like to get a fight in the meantime, maybe in America in July, and then fight the winner of this fight between Dennis Hogan and JJ Metcalf. I'd like to fight the winner of those on the Katie Taylor card in Crow Park in September.
Good man, happy days. And if that comes to pass, I'll do my best to get down there. Right, Spike, this is the last question. This is the very last question, and probably the hardest. But I'm only joking. What makes you happy? What makes you happy?
It's quite easy, really. I just love seeing, particularly my kids, when they're happy. You know, just that makes me happy. I love seeing them happy, and they are very happy, and that just fulfills me. And you know, all my loved ones, just seeing them, you know, doing well and, you know, being in a good place. That's what makes me happy, really.
Good man, happy days. Well, Spec, my final couple of words are, thanks very much for agreeing to do our podcast. It's been absolutely brilliant. You've been brilliant, and I wish you every success, and I'll do my best to get down to Croke Park if you get there. Happy days. Spec, thank you.
Cheers, Paul. Thanks very much. Lovely talking to you, and I'm sure we'll talk again some other time, and hopefully we meet in person before too long.
I hope so.